everybody. How's it going? Dieter Kurtenbach here with Mark Medina at Oracle Arena. Warriors take game one of the Western Conference Finals over the Portland Trailblazers, 116-94. Oh boy, do we have a lot to talk about with this one. Some Portland slander is coming your way, folks.
I mean, a series as riveting as the Warriors-Rockets game. You can probably tell how genuine I sound in the tone of my voice there. But in reality, Dieter, I felt like this game encapsulated the Warriors' regular season in a really good nutshell, because you would see at times the Warriors flashed brilliance and dominance, and other times you showed that they didn't really care and weren't trying. But when you added all the things together, it didn't matter because the Warriors are so good and they have so much more depth than the Portland Trail Blazers that they ended with a 116-94 victory over game one. And I do not want to be that guy that overreacts to one game of a playoff series, but I mean, this just has a feeling that it's going to be short.
You're not overreacting. I mean, that was a laugher. I don't know what to say. Like, the Warriors, there are terms that I want to use that I don't know if we're going to get like an explicit logo on our podcast, so I don't want to use it, but let's just say the Warriors messed around for 40 minutes and then turned it on for about 5 in the fourth and actually played some, like, I don't know, playoff level defense and like really put the screws to the Blazers, and the Blazers just had no idea what to do with that. It was kind of sad, actually. The longer view of it is, it was kind of sad watching Portland, who clearly didn't have the legs to compete in this game, given that they're coming off a game 7 against a very good Nuggets team in Denver. They come to Oakland. The Warriors had a couple of days off, but still, I mean, I was saying this is a 4-game series. People looked at me like I was taking crazy pills. I'm taking a victory lap. Like, there's the only way that this series goes more than 4 games is if the Warriors completely soil the bed.
Yeah, you know what? I still give it a 5-game series simply because I think it's going to happen in game 3. Warriors would be up 2-0. Maybe they'll let down even more. And to respect to Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum, like, they're due to shoot the ball better. Even if the Warriors are playing good defenses or two good scores, and they did not shoot the ball well tonight. You know, Damian, 19 points, 4-12 shooting. CJ McCollum had 17, 7-19. Incidentally, when you look at, you know, CJ McCollum's season, like, going into this series, he had that game 7 heroic performance against Denver. He's been playing really well, but head-to-head matchups against the Warriors, he's been shooting in the 30%. But that being said, I think he can still have a good shooting at, but overall, it doesn't really matter. It feels like just the series is over and doesn't have the same feeling as it was against Houston.
I mean, the series was over before this bad boy started, because as much as everyone likes CJ McCollum and Damian Lillard and they respect them, I'm just going to be a broken record here because it needs to be restated. They have not gone against a Golden State Warriors defense that is playing at a playoff caliber. I had people telling me that my prediction was wrong because the Blazers did well against the Warriors in the regular season, as if those games mean anything whatsoever. You have Klay Thompson and Andre Iguodala on Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. That's not to say they can't score against those guys, but they're not going to score 35 points or 37 points or whatever the hell McCollum got in game 7 on a bunch of mid-ranges with a bunch of steps backs. Like, this is a very different game of basketball. The Portland Trailblazers just got introduced to what championship level basketball looks like, and they are not prepared to go up against this team even without Kevin Durant.
Right, and here's why you don't really take much into regular season matchups. One, in fairness to the Blazers, they won one of them here at Oracle Arena because Damian Lillard hit a game winner, which was his final game, regular season game in Oracle Arena. It's fitting for the Oakland native. And the Warriors were kind of going through the motions. They weren't playing their best basketball. The other game, you know why the Warriors lost that game? It was two reasons. One, it was the last game before the All-Star break. Right. So Steve Kerr was sitting some of his guys to begin with. And secondly, Steve Kerr was so upset with the officiating, he spiked a clipboard and got an ejection. You combine that with Draymond Green getting called for a flagrant 1 foul. That turned into an 8-point play and became the difference and turning point in the game. And that means absolutely nothing. I was just Steve Kerr laying off some steam because the game didn't matter.
I was watching that game actually going into this series just to try to talk myself out of my 4 games sweep prediction, right? Because I'm the only person that I've seen that's predicted 4 games. And I really did not think it was a hot take. I was going through some of the deep stats and it's like, Portland's not good at anything. I don't mean to be mean about this, but like, the only category that they were notable in against all other playoff peers was offensive rebounding. And like, okay, what do they do tonight? 16, to 11. Like, cool. That worked out well for you. You still shot 36% and 25% from three. So, like, offensive rebounding is going to be a thing. I know that the Warriors will make an adjustment. Andrew Bogut was on and off in this game, and his canter had his way. But, like, let's be honest here. As much as you say, like, oh, those regular season – first off, it was just laughable watching the Warriors in that game right before the All-Star break. Like, coming off of having watched Game 6 and having watched them play against the Houston Rockets, where they were, if not engaged on the defensive side of the ball and really trying to play with some poise and click. And we saw the same thing in the series against the Clippers for a couple of games outside of the two that they lost. It was so clear, like, just being in the playoffs and seeing that on a nightly basis, more or less, and then watching a game from right before the All-Star break and watching the Warriors play defense, it was like watching them play at half speed, like literally half speed. And I thought the Warriors actually did a lot of the same stuff in this game. They played at half speed for a lot of this basketball game. Really sloppy, really messy, just trying to playing like pickup YMCA basketball, just chucking. Clay was chucking in the first half. And defensively, it was just like two rotations and then we'll see what happens. Like, they just don't fear this team at all, and nor should they. I do feel like Portland's going to come back and probably play a little bit better in game two, but like the notion that the Warriors like gave an A game is laughable. They played like a D-plus game, and they still won by the margin they won by. Like, if they click one more thing through, like, I have no idea how Portland counters this. It's really... I'm taking a victory lap. Like, this is a four-game series, unless the Warriors just decide to be gentlemen and let the Blazers have a game. And frankly, I don't think that they have any incentive to do that, given how they're playing, given the fact that they'll probably, you know, without Kevin there, they don't have a safety blanket, so they know they have to at least come a little bit right every game. They can't be totally lax. I just think that the Warriors are just going to go ahead and take care of this. And if they go up 3-0, like, what's Portland's incentive? Maybe they really try to ball out for their home crowd and push it back to a game five. But I bet most of the guys on that team aren't thinking to themselves, man, no, it'd be great. Another flight to Oakland. Like, that'd be really fun.
Well, it'd be great for Damian Lillard.
Why? So he could see a not final game here. Like, you know what Damian Lillard can do? He can get on a plane and fly to Oakland and watch game three of the NBA finals.
Fair enough. I mean, I think it would still hold some kind of value. I remember, you know, talking to his high school coach, and he was thinking, like, how poetic would it be if he shut down Oracle, the kid that grew up 5 minutes away? It's not going to happen, but yeah. I think it would still mean something. But your larger point does feel over. I think the main takeaway of this game is the fact that Steve Kerr went with such a huge rotation. Like, I was intrigued because of Game 6 and kind of the perfect set of circumstances where the Warriors felt threatened against Houston. They feel like the margin for error is very slim without Kevin Durant, that they needed the strength, the numbers, and everyone to go all out. And you're wondering, well, to what degree can that really carry over knowing the bench is inconsistency? And he was saying before the game, hey, the bench is going to have a huge role, and they did. And, you know, their credit, and it's a reflection of Portland not having the same amount of depth, but it's also credit to guys like Jonas Cherepko, Jordan Bell, taking care of their opportunity. That, you know, I'm doing the math here. What if you'd add 17, 20, 24, 27, 33. They had 36 points off the bench. Like, that's usually not in line with their season average, which is like in the low 20s.
Right.
And afterwards, I marveled at how delicately Steve Kerr was able to talk about why he says he's going to, you know, go with the 10, 11-man rotation. And at first, he was talking about the obvious advantages for some of the star players when you're looking, even without Kevin Durant tonight, none of the All-Stars, and certainly Andre Iguodala, played even close to 40 minutes. The highest was Clay, and he was at 37. And remember, against Houston, they were all up in the low 40s, mid-40s.
Yeah.
But then when he was pressed more, why do you think this is a good matchup?
In terms of playing all 11 guys.
Right. You know, for this team as opposed to the Rockets, instead of Steve Kerr outright saying, well, Portland's not good and the Rockets are, he delicately said, well, you know, the way Houston defends with their personnel and their switching, it causes a lot of disruptions. It causes a lot of different matchups. Fair point. There is a matchup puzzle to figure out with Houston. But at the end of the day, if You have good players.
Yeah.
Those matchups don't matter.
Yeah, the big difference on the matchups is that Houston has good players and the Blazers don't. And as much as I want to go in on the Blazers, like, the Blazers are not frauds. Like, we knew what they were coming in. I think that a lot of people just tried to talk themselves into this series meaning something because, oh, Kevin Durant's out. Like, you can create the narrative, but it's just not rooted in facts or basketball or anything like that. All you need to know in this game was the first couple of minutes of it when the Warriors, because Kevin Durant's not around, they run a lot of high pick and roll now. And they put Enes Kanter in the pick and roll like three times. And Enes Kanter just hung out in the lane. And so the Portland Trailblazers, their defensive scheme was to give the greatest three-point shooter of all time wide open three-pointers. That was their defensive scheme. And they did not change it the entire game. Steph Curry made 9 three-pointers in this game. Steph Curry only made 3 shots inside the three-point arc. He shot 23 times, 9 of 15 from beyond the arc. Like, that is not a formula that you will win a basketball game with, unless you're hoping that, again, the greatest three-point shooter of all time is going to miss, I don't know, 60, 70% of his three-pointers. I'd like to remind you, it's not like you're giving Quinn Cook these shots or giving Draymond these shots. Like, you're giving them to Stephen Curry. Darius Stotts was, like, completely incredulous after the game. Anthony Slater, to his credit, is like, hey, do you think that you can keep dropping Enes Kanter back, like, dropping him into coverage on the pick and roll? And he's like, what, should we trap him? And it's like, well, Houston trapped him. And it's like, was Houston trapping him when he scored 33 points in the second half? And Slater's like, yeah. And he's like, oh, we better take a look at that.
Well, I think also they trapped him when he went scoreless in the first, and they trapped him when he wasn't efficient at the beginning of the series. So obviously Houston's scheme for the most part worked.
But it doesn't even matter because it's Enes Kanter who's right. Trapping. And Enes Kanter is the worst pick-and-roll defender in the NBA. His reputation precedes him. For like half a decade now, everyone knows that Enes Kanter is the worst pick-and-roll defender in the NBA. So the Warriors are just going to run pick-and-roll at Enes Kanter until the Blazers take him off the floor, in which case then they might get into a secondary set. Like, this is the level of ease in which they can go. And there's I think that's the reason that the Warriors just kind of lollygagged around the court for 40-something minutes before they finally decided, like, man, we should probably put a decent effort out there just for the fans to get... Because it was quiet. I mean, that was a nappable basketball game. Honestly, I don't know how some people stayed awake. I was struggling to stay awake in that one because it just wasn't interesting. It looked every bit like a Blazers-Warriors game where a couple of guys were resting in the middle of January. And it's like, this is the Western Conference Finals. That was game 1 of the Western Conference Finals. And I think there was more excitement for like a Warriors-Pacers game in February.
I mean, Dieter, I'm giving you truth serum right now. I mean, do you just feel worn out from calling out the Rockets over all their shenanigans? Do you feel like you've just expended so much energy in the past week just laying into them?
No, it would take more energy than that because it's easy to just speak truths and the Rockets are frauds and I don't want to hear about them ever again, and I'm glad that they got exposed for what they were. Everyone likes the Blazers. It's impossible not to like the Blazers. They play the game the right way. They just don't have the dudes. And so it takes more energy for me to find a way for the Blazers to make this series interesting. Like, that's what maybe gassed me out. Like, having to listen to all these people say, like, oh, the Blazers can do it. Like, what? Are they just going to take away the three-point shot? Is Steph Curry going to get a virus? Like, I don't understand what game of basketball you're looking at. The big difference, again, the Blazers can't defend the Warriors, and the Warriors can defend the Blazers. And people, I do think that this is maybe a bigger indictment on sort of basketball conversation, the big capital C conversation that happens around the game. So ESPN and all this stuff. And listen, there are a lot of people that we know at ESPN who do a wonderful job. But when you talk about general narratives, no one ever talks about defense. And I don't want to be the old white guy who's like, oh, it's all about defense. But like, that's the difference between good teams and great teams, is that they play great defense. And the beauty of the last series was the Houston Rockets played great defense. Now, some of it might have been illegal, but it was great defense. And if it's not called, it ain't illegal. So the Blazers cannot play great defense. Straight up, they're not a good defensive team. They're an average defensive team at best. And we've seen the Warriors be a hyper-elite defensive team for the last 4 years. Like, I don't understand why people continue to do it. This is the same reason that Andre Iguodala is consistently underrated. It's the same reason that Draymond Green never gets the credit he deserves. It's the same reason that Klay Thompson's going to get the max contract, and some people don't quite understand why. It's because if you stop other dudes from scoring, it's just as good as getting a basket yourself. And people don't talk about defense. The Warriors have it. The Blazers don't. And, oh, yeah, the Warriors have a significantly better offense, too. Where is the win for Portland in this series? I'm looking for it. I want Portland to win it. I think that they deserve a win. But not on the merits of them as a basketball team. It's just because they're nice guys and they play the right way.
Yeah, I mean, again, I mean, they did get more looks at the foul line, and CJ and Damian might make more shots. But that's really it. To your point about defense, this is why Draymond Green should be commended a lot more, because for the most part in the playoffs, you've been seeing him at his absolute peak, and it's this game captured Draymond in a nutshell. We've seen this throughout the playoffs, but I think on top of that, you've seen Draymond elevate his leadership presence, where without Kevin Durant, he seems to be taking even more of a charge. And the fact that, especially in that Houston series, there were a lot of different defensive puzzles they're trying to figure out. He was the guy really quarterbacking everyone. And with this Portland Trailblazers team, like, there is no one that has a counterpunch to that.
Let's just call out what the defense is for the Warriors here. It's like this weird quasi-zone thing that they got going on, because they don't have to respect any of Portland's outside shooters. As much as we talk about the Rockets being isolation heavy and, you know, just kind of a two-man show, it's either James Harden or Chris Paul is going to shoot it, the Blazers had a lower assist percentage so far this playoffs than even the Rockets. So you want to talk about a two-man show, it's McCollum or Lillard or nothing for this team, because they don't have a guy, even like P.J. Tucker, who can knock down a three in the corner. Like, you're dealing with Mo Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu. Like, Cantor's worthless. I don't understand. Yes, Cantor's always been a good offensive rebounder and a nice, scrappy second-chance guy. He's a backup five at best, and he's like a backup five that you throw in certain situations. Like, he's not a guy you can play every night. You can't play him in game two if you expect to win, but I don't really know what your alternative is. Like, Rodney Hood played well. Rodney Hood is just kind of a guy who's going to go out there and get you buckets. Like, that's what Rodney Hood's about. The Warriors didn't worry about Rodney Hood in last year's NBA Finals. They're not worrying about him now. Like, Evan Turner, I like Evan Turner a lot. He shot one time. Like, you're not concerned about him. Seth Curry, you're not concerned about him. He's tiny. Like, as much as Steph is one of the greatest players of all time, like, it's laughable how much better Steph is than Seth, despite everyone's column, including mine, about, like, oh, it's going to be so great watching them play together. It's not cool watching the little brother, like, get his butt kicked on a nightly basis. So I just don't, like, there's no alternative. Like, there's no outside shooters. So it's just, like, how many times can Dame do a step-back three? How many times can C.J. McCollum try to do a step-back shot from the foul line? And it's like, you don't think that Clay and Andre Iguodala know how to stop that stuff, or at least limit it? Like, give me a break. Like, that's what defense is about. And Draymond, he can just wander around wherever the hell he wants. He just, if he wants to be on the perimeter on one play, that's fine. He can just totally leave his dude and go ahead. And I think he had three blocks in this game. I think he's averaging three blocks against the Blazers over the last couple of years, because he doesn't have to respect the outside shot. He just can wander into the paint and do whatever he wants. And sometimes he's the one who has to attack the ball. Sometimes, you know, the center who's ever on the court, Looney, is the guy who kind of comes in afterwards and gets the stat. But I'm looking for the counterpunch here from the Blazers. I'm really racking my brain here as to how the Blazers can do it. Like, they can't go five out. They don't have the personnel to go five out, because they don't have a guy who can play the five. Like, you can't play Harkless at the five. Aminu is not as good of a defender as maybe he once was, and he's not giving you anything on offense. You put Seth out there, you're just asking to give up buckets. Like, he might be able to get you a bucket every now and again, but you got to really work the ball, and frankly, he's going to give up more than he's going to get. I mean, you're playing Hood a lot already. I guess you play Collins, Turner, Harkless, McCollum, Lillard, and Seth? Like, I don't know. Like, maybe Scalabissiere gets a run. Like, I don't know where these Blazers go from here, because it's not as if they didn't try to execute their game plan. I guess they're just hoping that Dame and McCollum make more baskets, and I think most people will just presume, oh, they'll just do better in the next game. They had a bad game because they're coming off of Game 7. I don't think that that's entirely the case. They will play better, don't get me wrong, but, like, I don't know how much better. Defense matters, and the Warriors played good defense on them pretty much all night.
Now, I want to hit on the Steph stuff, because people who follow the NBA knew it wasn't going to be this, like, epic showdown, because their careers play out much differently. But I think there was a thought that there could be some interesting moments. And there were leading into the game. Like, there was much of a tension of, like, who's Dell and Sonya going to be rooting for? And they were kind of clever with, like, splitting the difference, right? Where, okay, so Dell has – Steph's jersey in front and Seth on the back, and then Sonya reversed it, Seth's jersey in the front, Seth on the back. But there really weren't any, like, moments that were cool at all. There was one moment where Steph bit on one of Seth's pump fakes, but then he missed the open shot. But there weren't any, like, mano-a-mano moments. I was kind of disappointed.
Is this where we're at, though? I mean, is this where we're at with this series? Like, we should have known coming in, if that was our main storyline, that this was not going to be important.
You know where we're at? We're talking about Damian Jones's comeback. Like, this...
Yeah, baby!
He appeared in mop-up duty, and it was notable because he hadn't played since December 1st when he tore his left pectoral muscle. It was also notable because Steve Kerr did not mention that Damian Jones was available. He had mentioned a few days ago, hey, we just cleared him for some contact to doing three-on-three, but he gave absolutely no mention that, oh, yeah, like, he's going to be ready and available for game one. Now, it was, what, a minute and 42 seconds? But it is notable because he hasn't played since December, and I think it is notable that maybe moving forward, there is a chance he could be a larger part of the center rotation, and there might be an interesting puzzle of how Steve Kerr handles him and Jordan Bell and Jonas Jerebko, Andrew Bogut. Basically, where the Warriors at is the ultimate first world problems of the. It's a foregone conclusion they're going to win the regular season game and has the same feel. So let's microanalyze the end of the rotation.
Damian Jones is a nice guy, so I'm happy that he came back. He's a very large, athletic gentleman, so maybe he can provide some value there. Like, when you're getting 2 minutes and 30 seconds of Jacob Evans III in the Western Conference Finals, you know how this series is going to go. That's it. I mean, listen. Quinn, Jonas, Jordan even, they got some run in game six. Now, it's a much different circumstances, and I do want to make that distinction, because I think we can just pound this one home so people don't get the wrong idea. There was a big difference over those guys playing in game six of the Western Conference semifinals against the Rockets and them playing in game one of this series. They played in game six because the Warriors were gassed and they needed those guys to come in and tread water. And if they were not treading water, they would have gotten pulled immediately. And they did. They did an admirable job. The Golden State Suns had that game tied 57-57 at halftime. It was just found money for Steve Kerr. As he loves that term, found money. Or house money, whatever you want to call it. It was beautiful for him. Those guys got in there because they just needed another human being to give Steph some rest, Andre some rest. It's a much different mindset. In this game, Quinn Cook was just in. Like, second quarter, Quinn Cook, go ahead. Normal minutes. It felt like January. Those were built-in minutes. If Quinn Cook was not having a good time out there, if he was having a bad game, if he was missing his shots like he did early in the game, Steve wasn't going to pull him. He had a certain rotation point, and he was going to come out at that certain rotation point. It's a much different mindset than kind of break glass in case of emergency in game six, whereas in this one, it was penciled in. Like, here's how the game's going to go. And it went exactly according to plan. And frankly, the Warriors probably should have won by 40 as opposed to whatever they won by, like 20-something.
Yeah, I mean, here's the other thing we got to monitor. Kevin Durant's going to get reevaluated Thursday. And this whole notion of, oh, he's missing the Western Conference Finals, I don't know why that was news. As soon as he injured his right calf game five the following day, he had an MRI, and they said he'll be reevaluated in a week. So that means from then on out in a week, he's not doing anything. So what they're determining Thursday is, okay, what can Kevin start doing? Well, pencil him out for game two, but right. Friday could be the earliest day of some live action, maybe some contact stuff. They don't really practice to begin with, but Steve Kerr will want him to do something before returning. So if you're looking at that and the fact that they haven't given a specific grade to his calf strain, but they've termed it mild, and I've talked to doctors outside of the Warriors that are just doctors that are experts at this. They say that mild essentially means grade one. So the typical recovery period is 7 to 10 days. He injured it last Wednesday. Tomorrow will be a week. Maybe Saturday is, 10 days? Maybe a little bit after. But I'm wondering, why bother? The number one priority is they're not going to rush him back like it's fully healthy. But even if he's fully healthy, like, you wonder, hey, maybe they can just afford to sit him even more.
If he's fully healthy, there's no reason to not put him on the court. I mean, fully healthy is relative. If he's 90%, though, and the Warriors are up 3-0, sit his ass down. You're going to need every bit of Kevin Durant for the Milwaukee Bucks or Toronto Raptors. Mark that down. As much as everyone in this series is going to be like, oh, the Warriors don't need Kevin Durant. No, they don't need Kevin Durant against the Portland Trailblazers. And they didn't need Kevin Durant for one game. You play out that game 6-7 more times, they would have needed Kevin Durant. Like, there's no way the Warriors split the difference, you know, thread the needle there the way that they did in game 6 of the series against the Rockets, like 4 or 5 times in a row. Like, that would just be totally ridiculous. That was a narrow win, as we were talking about a second ago. You're going to need every bit of Kevin Durant for the NBA Finals, which are now inevitable. I feel very, very comfortable saying that. I don't know who would have to go down for the Warriors that they don't make the NBA Finals, but we're getting pretty deep on the list. And it comes down again to just the talent. Okay, you say you got Dame, you got CJ. Who's the third best player on the Portland Trailblazers there, Mark Medina?
Honestly, I couldn't even tell you.
Just venture. Who is the third best player on their team tonight?
Honestly, I couldn't even tell you.
I think it was probably Rodney Hood. So that's about all you need to know about this series, because the Warriors' third best player is Defensive Player of the Year Draymond Green, and their fourth best player is NBA Finals MVP and future Hall of Famer Andre Iguodala. And their fifth best player is the best player of them all, probably, Kevon Looney, who had an outstanding game again because, well, it's the regular season, and Kevon Looney dominated in the regular season. So I just want to fast forward. Just get to Portland. It's going to be a great time in Portland. Listen, let me hedge for half a second here, because I have been slandering the Blazers here pretty good. The Warriors could just go out and lay an egg in game 2. I mean, they could. Draymond was feeling real good after this game. I walked with him into the press conference. I walked with him out of the press conference. He was bouncing. He was downright skipping. To be fair, you know, plenty to feel good about for the Warriors. But it did remind me a little bit of how the Rockets handled themselves after wins. And certainly the Warriors never handled themselves in the way that the Rockets handled themselves when they're down. But, you know, you like to keep that even keel like Andre Iguodala has and Steph Curry has, just steady as she goes, never too high, never too low. Maybe this team, seeing that they could just mess around for 40-something minutes and still win by a sizable margin, decides, well, let's make it a full 48. And maybe the Blazers, in fact, I would bet that the Blazers come out just a little bit better in the next game, especially if the Warriors don't want to play, you know, really good defense. Maybe the Warriors just have one of those epic letdown games the way that they did in round 1 against arguably a better opponent. I don't know, probably about equal. It's not as if the Warriors haven't proven that they could lose games. Maybe this series does go to Portland 1-1, but it's going to take a real big effort from the Warriors for that to happen, given what we saw in game 1. Am I off base with that at all? Where do you stand?
No, you're not off base. I mean, I think the Warriors shouldn't have a problem. I am still clinging to there will be one game that a combination of Damian or CJ will go off. And maybe that's game 2. Maybe that's game... I think it's going to be game 3.
What does going off mean? Because, you know, we were talking about how many points they would need to score combined, and most people are saying 60. I think it's 70. What does going off mean to you?
It could be a single one. If it's just Damian, a 30-point night, 40-point night, and they're shooting efficiently, or a combination of you're having Damian maybe in the high 20s, and CJ in the high 20s, or maybe collectively in the low 30s, and they're efficient.
But that's going to require then Steph and Clay to do something worse than that. And then we're getting into the deeper levels here. Like, yes, you know, Mo Harkless is not going to have another 17.7 for 12 game. Like, Mo Harkless, nice guy, good player. He's not that guy. Enes Kanter, 16 rebounds, 5 offensively, like 10 points. Like, he can't play 30 minutes in the next game. So he's not going to be able to make that kind of an impact. Yes, McCollum and Lillard are going to play better. I don't think that much better because of defense. Again, Steph and Clay are getting wide open shots. So you're going to have the combination of Steph and Clay not shooting well and those other in the Portland guys shooting well. And even then, I think that maybe, you know, then it comes down to the difference of the other dudes. And the Warriors have a significant advantage there.
Yeah, and two other things that I think could coincide. One that's related to Damian and CJ, they got more looks to the foul line, so that's free buckets for them, and also it slows the pace down.
Right.
And without Kevin Durant, the Warriors have been looking all the time to run. So that could take them out of their offensive flow. And then two, Portland won on the rebounding battle tonight. It wasn't enough to really make a difference because the Warriors have so much more depth. But that's a hustle stat, and maybe if you combine all those things, that's when they have a game. But I think we're really splitting hairs. I think it'll happen game 3. Maybe it could happen game 2. But the reality is, if that scenario happens, the Warriors respond the very next game and then blow them out. And that's not even a foregone conclusion they get a game. This could be a very well chance that's a sweep. But I'm just giving them a fighter's chance that, you know, their backcourt is good and they could have a pretty good night. And they didn't have a good night tonight.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people want to give them a fighter's chance because they're nice guys, but there's no justice in basketball.
One thing I do respect about them is they got to the foul line the way you're supposed to get to the foul line, yes. By driving to the basket and not flailing your arms and throwing up threes that you're not intending to make and flopping. Again, you know, whatever the Houston fan base wants to say about us, like, I don't care who wins, but I'm talking about just how what the game of basketball is all about, and watching that was hideous. And it was nice to actually get back to normal basketball.
100%. There was one shot by Lillard where he just kind of ran into the defender who was there and misplaced. I think it was Looney on the perimeter. Maybe it was Clay. But Steph did the same thing, I think, a couple of possessions before that. So eye for an eye. All good. And yes, it was as much as it was a sleepy affair, it was played the right way. And I guess we can't take that stuff for granted anymore after what we just saw. I'll tell you what, given what we saw here in Game 1 tonight, I'm very excited to watch whatever happens in the Eastern Conference Finals starting on Wednesday night. That should be a very interesting series and perhaps a bit more interesting than this one. We can get some basketball intrigue there. That's the Bucks and the Raptors. That's Wednesday night. We got to tell you, Klay Thompson had a wonderful game tonight, as per usual. It's the playoffs. It's Klay, 26 points. Not the most efficient. He was kind of chucking, let's be honest. You know, a nice big dunk. Feeling good after the game. An excellent defense, as per usual, from Klay Thompson. It's the playoffs. That means that you should get the Klay deal. Klay deal is 11 cents a day for the next 11 months, including a commemorative championship book from last year, which will probably soon be very outdated. It's called Three. It's a dandy. Mark Medina's in it a lot. You should get the Klay deal.
I think you're in it, too.
Not as much. I was actually kind of shocked at how little. Though, to be fair, my prose does not lend itself to I'm very in the moment, right? Like, that's why I like the podcast. It's in the moment. It's rapid fire. It's in real time. Whereas Mark Medina's prose will stand the test of time. You know, it's more the Red Sea Scrolls, you know. They hold up. We got to get the hell out of here. I'm losing my mind. That game bored me to death, and now it's translating into the podcast. Klay deal, it's 11 cents a day for the next 11 months. You're going to be hitting the paywall. Maybe not in this series, but in the next series, you're definitely going to be hitting the paywall. You're going to want all of our coverage, and you can get around that paywall by paying for it. How novel is that? What an idea. It's the Klay deal, 11 cents a day, 11 months. Please let us know if you pick that up. And please, if you've made it this far, subscribe to the podcast. We'd really appreciate those subscriptions, and any reviews would be lovely because we have figured out our audio issues, at least so I think. Hit us up with a 5-star. We would greatly appreciate it. Mark, tell the people where they could find you on the Twitter.com machine.
Yeah, we got Mark_Medina. Dieter, I think you're at D. Kurtenbach. And again, you go to the Mercury News at the East Bay Times. It has the link to the Klay deal, 11 cents a day for 11 months, free Warriors Championship commemorative book. And hey, the way things are going, there might be another book in the works.
Exactly. And you can also get all the great San Jose Sharks coverage that we're putting out. Game 3 of those Western Conference. It's just the Western Conference final there. They don't get the finals, no plural. Blues and Sharks. That's coming for you come Wednesday night. That's been an awesome series. I might switch over to that one, all things considered. It's been so much fun. Warriors, Blazers, Game 2, Thursday night, Oracle Arena. We will talk to you then. Should be fun.